Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Daigle Bites ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Daigle Bites podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Daigle. I'm a singer that hails from the deep swamps of Louisiana. I ventured my way up to Nashville to take the risk of jumping in on the pipe dream of singing on stages other than the ones I grew up seeing. Along this journey, I wrote a song called You Say, and what came next absolutely changed my life. I found myself in tour buses, singing on stages all over the world. And every single night, I would get asked the question, what would Lauren Daigle be doing if she hadn't pursued music? Well, this season of Daigle Bites is answering just that. And I'm bringing you along with me on this adventure. I'm inviting new friends that I've just met and old friends that I've known for a long time to come and explore what it is like to pursue their passions. I know that they've inspired me, and I'm sure that they will probably do the exact same thing for you. So my absolute hope is that as you're sitting and you're listening, you then too can be inspired. You then too can ask the question, what is it that I would love to do with my life? And maybe along the way, you'll find steps to making that happen. So pull up a seat. Join us in the conversation. You have a place here. This is the Daigle Bites podcast on Amazon Music. Everybody, welcome to the Daigle Bites podcast. I'm Lauren Daigle, your host, and I am very excited to tell you a little bit about my next guest. I met this dear friend of mine in 2015 on the Chris Tomlin Christmas tour. I was singing the song Noel each night, and I remember Chris said, hey, Lauren, I want you to meet my dear friend, blank, blank, no spoiler alerts allowed. I knew I was going to be dear friends with this guy whenever he emailed me the day after I met him and said, hey, would you like to go skydiving today? I was like, who is this guy? This is amazing. I ended up not being able to go skydiving, something I absolutely regret. So I quickly emailed him back and said, hey, please, can I take you up on this later on? And we still have yet to go skydiving together, but we have been on a numerous amount of capers together. Today's guest is none other than Bob Goff. His book, Love Does, actually came at one of the most poignant moments in my life. I felt like I was completely overwhelmed. It was so much change from the very beginning of my career. And I remember we met at this crepe shop in Nashville. And I said, Bob, what do I do to keep the wonder alive? I feel like I'm becoming an adult way too soon. I feel like I'm stressed out half the time. And this is not who I am. And you know what he said? He said, go and remind yourself of the 8-year-old version of yourself, because that's the girl that's trying to get out right now. And every time you go into a meeting with people in suits and all of that, he said, take a Mr. Potato Head. And if you know anything about me, you know the joke with me and Mr. Potato Head. Well, that all originated because of Bob Goff. Bob's greatest ambitions in life are to love others, do stuff, and most importantly, to hold hands with his wife, sweet Maria Goff. I absolutely treasure this friend. He is one of my favorites. Please help me welcome Bob Goff. Okay, so to start, first of all, I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you give me your time.
Me too.
Can you tell the story about the fig tree?
Yeah, like the we have a tree, an olive tree actually, between our houses.
That's right.
And
I'm sorry.
I think one of the branches was kind of sneaking over next door. And so somehow all of them got cut off on that side. And one of the things that I did is I could have gotten a new tree, but I decided to just remember to love my neighbor. So we can surround ourselves just like pictures and words and imagery and music that remind us of who we are. You can also have reminders of who you're not, to say, like, I don't want to be the guy. I'm not trying to be right. I'm actually trying to be a little bit more like Jesus. And I'm not always getting there. Oftentimes I'm not, but I'm finding the more intent I am on that, I keep more thoughts in the thought bubble and less words sneak out. Count to 10 is fine, but what would be even better is to just wait 10 and then find better words, like access, different words, and then assume things are going on differently in somebody else's life than are going on in yours to be actually genuinely curious. We did some stuff together in San Quentin, you and I, and I went back there. I was thinking about you. It was maybe a week ago, but I was there. We were going to film a thing with the guys. Oh, there was one person that you know really well, and he's actually really good at baseball, but he's been in jail for a super long time because he had done something really bad. And he said, do you want to pitch batting practice? So in the, you remember walking through the yard and they have people that are like with weights and then there's kind of a baseball field in the middle. And when I got there, there's a screen in between me, the pitcher, and the plate. And so when I throw it, if he like line drives it back at me, I don't like have to get a new face, which actually would be an upgrade. But so the first thing I said was like, can we, let's remove the screen. And he's like, dude, like, really? I said, I just don't want anything between me and you. And I was thinking, man, that'll preach. If we can just get rid of whatever's between you and whoever you're supposed to be or you and the person you're with. And I was thinking I was going to do a Dr. Fauci, you know, where you throw for home base and it hits third. I hadn't pitched a ball since high school. And I actually still had it, Lauren. I got it right over the plate. And he hit it over the fence, but I got over the plate. And so on about the fifth pitch, I remember he was kind of crowding the plate a little bit. And I was feeling a little bit too cocky. So I thought, I'm going to brush this guy back. And I threw it a little inside. I hit him right between the shoulder blades, like really hard. Oh, do not hit a guy who's in San Quentin for a long time.
Yeah.
So we had that awkward moment. Like, is he going to charge the plate? But the kind of the neat part was he was just so gracious. I was the guy in wrong. He was the guy with a reputation for being a bad guy. I was the bad guy in the thing. But the neat thing is seeing his kindness towards me just makes me think I could be a little bit more kind, a little bit more patient for the person that's holding me up or letting me down. And I mean, I hit him like pretty hard. But his first reaction was to care for me. He didn't run out the plate and pummel me. He was just like a really kind guy. One last thought from what happened at that thing. Oh, there's the tallest building. Remember, the hospital has a fifth floor on it. Like only the warden would be up there. And a guy came up with us to film this interview we were doing. And he's all tatted up and he starts weeping. Like when he gets to the top and I'm like, are you okay? Like what's going on? And he'd been in prison for 23 years. He'd never seen the water. He'd smelled the water because San Quentin's surrounded by water. He was told the water was there. He'd never seen the water and he lost it. And I think our job with your music, with our careers, with what we do, we want to tell people there's water out there. Let me show you.
I love that he was vulnerable enough to share his affections and his emotions in those moments, that even with as thick as those walls have been around him, it didn't actually remove his being, you know?
Yeah.
There's something really profound about that, that he was able to see water and still be moved.
Some stuff happens in our lives and we start digging moats around the castle walls. And I just want to build a couple more drawbridges to say, I know some really wonky things happened. It happened to you, it happened to me, it happened to whoever's listening. But to say, could we build a couple more ways in? Find some safe people that you can be authentic, that they may have an agenda for themselves, they don't have an agenda for you. So I would say in our friendship, Lauren, I have an agenda for me. I don't have an agenda for you. My agenda is like, just be friends and do life. And so if you had people with fewer agendas, it doesn't mean I'm rudderless, because I have an agenda for me. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I want people to just play their song. Oh, 42 years ago, you know what I thought it would be? I think you're in music, so you may know the name, a lutist, like just somebody that makes guitars. So I met a guy and he made guitars. And I said, will you teach me how? And so we got all the wood and we bent it and we made the soundboard and the hole in the neck and the everything. I got all the way up to the fretboard. And I didn't finish the guitar. I carried that guitar around for 42 years. And this week it went in to get the fretboard.
What?
Isn't that crazy? I gave it to a guy. He looks like he's with the Doobie Brothers in every respect. And he had said he was put the fretboard on. He said, no sweat, man. You're like 99% of the way there. But I never played a song for 42 years because I never got to the last piece. Like just the fretboard. Wow. I'm like, people get to the last piece. No shame in it. Just figure out what's keeping you back. What's the screen between you and whatever you want to get to? And like, just move the screen to the side.
Okay. What are some tips that you have for people who feel like they're just hitting the wall?
Yeah.
How do I see the screen?
It's kind of like finding another gear. And you know, this old Jeep I've got, when you go to change gears, you put in the clutch once, and it won't change gears. That just like slows down the gears. And then you put in the clutch a second time, then you can change gears. And so sometimes you just got to double clutch. Sometimes you got to, it takes a second. It made me think of the first time as revisiting, why did I start out? What was the big ambition that I had about touching lives, inspiring people, finding some beautiful lyrics that like connect with people who they are, and that requires some vulnerability, maybe kind of ripping the scab off from time to time. There, you could go around the corner and find a little self-loathing and all this stuff, like some missing pieces.
Yes.
But to say, if it doesn't work the first time, I want to just not bail on the idea. I'm just going to put in the clutch again and see if I can find that next gear. And so I want people to just realize the important work that you're doing and like not get distracted. I just finished a book, and that is the title of it, Undistracted. And part of it is just thinking of examples of people that just didn't get distracted. You, a guy, Nehemiah, that's like, everybody hears about it, but he was building a big wall. And four of his buddies kept saying, hey, can you come down and do this? And he said, I'm doing important work. I can't come down. And then somebody else said, oh, somebody's trash talking you like over there. And he said, I'm doing important work. I can't come down. Four times this happens. And he just kept saying the same thing. He was just trigger locked on the important work he was doing. It was like he double clutched. He knew why he was doing what he was doing, and he wasn't going to get distracted along the way. I'm like, and so I think you're doing important work, and I've got some stuff going on overseas, and there's a lot of distractions. You might get misunderstood. I get misunderstood all the time. That's just Tuesday for me. I'm like, whatever. But I'm also like I'm a happy guy, but I'm super sensitive. You know that side of me. I can't even say goodbye without like welling up. I'm emotionally incontinent, but easily to distract. I want to say like, I'm doing important work. I'm finding that new gear. I'm not going to get distracted. And if we could do that, I think we'd get down to like finishing the song, finish the guitar, play the music.
Okay, I have three stories. I'm going to tell them quickly back to back, but I feel like there's so much wealth into what you just said. Story number one, do you remember the time that I was at your house and I was like, I know that I have a record to make? And you said, cool, you're not allowed to eat until you finish a song and you can stay in my sailboat.
I remember.
You have to sleep in the sailboat and you're not allowed to eat until the song is finished. Do you know, I went on a sailboat trip the other day. It was just a day trip, really small. I walked in and I just sat in there where all the beds were, the living room area. And I just sat and I listened to you say that in my head. I just listened to it over and over. And I was like, okay, there's more in here. There's more in the hull of the sailboat. I will draw more songs out. There will be more to come. And do you know, since then, this next record I'm working on right now, I've written more songs alone than I have in my career thus far because of setting up those moments of, okay, well, it might not be a writing room that you can write in today because just being still, sometimes I have a really hard time with it. But if you go on a walk, you're not allowed to come back home until the song is finished. And you have to just sing it into your voice. You know, there's all these moments that I've drawn from that one saying, just you're not allowed to leave the sailboat until you finish the song. That's story number one. I thank you for that.
Yeah, you're doing important work. I'm just glad that you're not getting down. You're not coming out. You're not returning. I'm just going to get my work done. I want to fail trying. I don't want to fail watching. Like, I'd rather try the lyric and have it not work than not write down the lyric.
Someone told me the other day, oh, I'm not an expert at this. I just fail forward.
Yeah.
I loved that idea. I fail forward because even if it's a failure, it's still launching me into the next step.
Totally.
So, regardless of if it's failure or success, it all kind of becomes success at some point because it gets you to the next step.
And then not getting hung up by all those steps, like not getting hung up with all the details. I don't think you get hung up in the details, do you?
My manager just shook her head up and down. Yes, you get
you
hung
do
up
get
in the details.
Hung up in the details. Yeah, I think I'm probably I have a respect for the details, but I don't feel like I'm hung up in those. But you get like a little mired with that.
I do. I think I get mired with expectation. Hmm. So if I know that there's a lot of expectation intertwined in all of the details, then I think I get overwhelmed. Expectation is so interesting. I've found that it could be really great because it applies pressure and allows me to soar. I like to work well under pressure. But the flip side is, will I deliver? Can I measure up? All of those kind of thoughts start to play in.
I think at the risk of like wordsmithing it, I just seems like mired in the emotion, but not in the planning. As I've experienced you, you're like, okay. I mean, we were just talking before we started about a pretty crazy plan, but you weren't mired in the details. It's like, I don't know, does that country give visas? Answer, not many. but the details didn't seem to slow you down, but the emotion around it. It's a expectation from a, you know, a relationship that was kind of wonky, or parents or friends that are still working on their people skills a little bit, or even strangers that have a big voice in your life, but they just don't have a big part of your life. I just don't want to get hung up in the details. We've got a water tower up at this place we've got. And we were filming a thing for Magnolia, like, and we're going to let all these balloons go at the top of the water tower. And I thought, this is going to be so awesome. But I had to take all the balloons to the top of the tower. And I was thinking, like, how am I going to do that? And still, there's all these little handholds going up. And I got up to I was like looking up for probably a solid 10 minutes. And I say, I'm going to move here, then I'll grab this, then I'll do this. Lauren, I'm not kidding. Something caught my eye. I looked down, there's a coiled rattlesnake at my feet.
Oh.
And I was looking up, I wasn't looking down where my feet are. And so what I want to do is kind of, I think you taught me that idea of be where your feet are, like to be fully present where you are, not thinking 10 expectations or 10 conversations or 3 concerts from now, but just like be where your feet are, be with the people who love you. Are we good? I get real with some anxiety that I'm having because like whatever it is, and then start climbing the tower.
Yep. Okay. That leads me to the next story, which is kind of perfect. You were talking about distraction with Nehemiah. I love that analogy so much. I love that story. On this quest of like, why am I feeling like I'm hitting brick walls? What screen needs to be moved aside? The other day, so have you heard of this thing called the light phone?
No.
Okay. It's a phone that has no internet access. It's just, it's how phones used to be like in the 2000s, but it's just cellular access, like phone calls, text messages, a calendar, and a calculator. That's it. And it's not even an LED screen. It's literally like a Kindle, like you're reading a book.
Yeah.
I got one, and the whole purpose was what you just mentioned, removing distraction, because I find myself, when I started this career, I was able to be so inventive and creative, and I was able to dream and execute because there wasn't this inundation of information. Like, I feel like in my generation specifically, there's such an inundation of information, whether it's opinion or whether it's misplaced value or whether it's jumping in and going to say, oh, I'm going to answer this, but constant connection, that the ability to never just turn off. You have to be, I miss a letter. I miss writing a letter. I actually thought about, if I have to tell someone something, would I be willing to send a letter versus a text message, even though that's not the way of the world anymore? But what would it feel like walking to your mailbox and receiving, hey, just wanted to see how you're doing? Wouldn't that surprise you? Like that it's not, you know, Cox Communications calling for the next build. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, what a refreshing way to exist. And I feel like with things moving at such rapid speed, I don't know if you feel caught up in the current ever, but I feel like sometimes I'm on a ship that's just being tossed and turned by the waves. And I'm looking for that area. You know, sometimes a wave will provide that one little route of exit. And you've got to know exactly how to slice the wave to exit smoothly. And I feel like there's a piece of me that is longing for, okay, how can I exit the amount of distraction I've allowed to invade into my world so that I can get more direct and more defined so that my scope, when I'm looking through the scope, the target is dead center in the bullseye. And I think I've learned some of that from you in Dream Big, which for all the listeners, Bob has an incredible book, Dream Big, but he also hosts gatherings where people sit and they explore their dreams together and they explore what's holding them back. They explore how to propel their dreams forward. And I don't know if you remember this, but you mentioned how sometimes it's like seven horses and you line all the horses up. And for everybody listening, the horses are the dreams. And you line all seven horses up and you spank each one of them on the butt and you see which one runs the fastest. And that one that is out the gate and like on, that's where you focus your attention.
Yeah, that's it. Fast pony.
Fast pony. And yeah. I feel like I've been looking at all of these ponies and they're all at a stalemate. And so that's when I look and I say, okay, well, where is distraction coming in? Where is Nehemiah in this? How did Nehemiah stay focused? He knew what was on the other side. I don't know. I just feel like Dream Big gave a lot of opportunity that I still reflect on to this day. I know this is kind of a side note, but from going to be a lawyer, which I do want to talk to you about.
Yeah, you bet.
To Dream Big. I feel like there were so many years in there. Do you want to tell that story of tenacity and perseverance? I think about that story all the time.
Yeah. Pepperdine's such a wonderful place. And they do let me teach there a class. It was another school that let me in, but it was, I did apply to Pepperdine. They just said no. Like no, but there was a that was just good judgment on their part. Their University of San Diego, they hadn't said yes and they hadn't said no. It was like that middle area where most of us live. And so I just sat in front of the dean's office. I told him, you have the power. All you need to say is get your books and I'd be in. Like you've got that kind of power. And so maybe for people listening to think about, what is your ambition? What's that job you want? What's that career you want? And to find somebody, and when you say no, don't say like, God closed the door. I'm like, well, go yeah. Texas on it. Just shoot the hinges off. Just to say, I've had this dream, this ambition for 20 years. And just because somebody said, no, this isn't God. That's Billy that said no. And to say like, well, I don't say no. So I remember just doing a sit-in. I just sat in front of that office for day after day after day after day after day. And I had the dean's like schedule memorized. I mean, he'd get up to go to the bathroom. I'm thinking, well, it's a little early, but he's had a lot of water. And I remember law school started. I'd been sitting on the bench for 10 days. And law school started. No, I didn't get in the first day and the second day and the third day. I'm not even in law school when I'm behind. And I heard the footfall of him coming to the door. And I looked up and he turned to me and he said, get your books. And I just think instead of waiting for permission, what if we started acting like we have permission? Still have humble hearts, but to just say, gosh, maybe God has given you permission to do a whole lot more. And you're sitting there waiting and you've already got the Willy Wonka ticket. You just don't realize you've got the Willy Wonka ticket. Like you're yes. admitted, it's an all access pass. You get to just, you yes. can go anywhere with this thing. I mean, don't go knock off a liquor store. You'll be in my class at San Quentin. But what if you act like I have all access? You have access to your faith. You have access to people who creep you out. There's some people you might want to keep a little bit at bay just because they're unsafe people for you emotionally, physically. But maybe draw near to some people just because You know, they're working on their people skills a little bit. Doesn't mean that they're weird. It means that they're just a different version of you. They're just insecure and dealing with it in a different way than I am. But to see what people are doing and try to find out what they need by what they do. You've been over to the house and you know I have a hedge behind the house to keep people kind of on the path and have just a little bit of privacy. And this guy jumped over the hedge. He ran across the lawn, up the stairs, across the lawn again, and he was carrying something. And I was thinking, I had somebody throw a snake through a car window into my lap because they thought it would be fun. And I'm like, so I'm just a little, I'm not paranoid, but I'm just mindful. Like, I'm like, what's in the bag? And it was an ice block, Lauren. And I'm like, well, this is a first. he introduced himself and he said, my name is Lee. And so I'm like, wow, thank you. And he left. And I thought, well, you know, that'll never happen again. It happened five more times. And every time he would hop over the hedge and he would bring a bigger ice block with me. And I thought it was like cute, but I was kind of distracted by all the other things going on and some peculiar behaviors. And I just didn't get it. Well, about the fifth time, he didn't go over the hedge. He went through the hedge. He had an ice block. I bet it weighed 75 pounds. It was just this huge thing. And we never got around to talking about what this was all about. I was just trying to be polite. And I got a call maybe a month or two ago on my cell phone and the caller ID said Lee something. I thought, oh, I wonder if that's the ice block guy. And it was a woman. And she said, I'm Lee's wife. And I'm like, oh, wow. How's Lee? And she said, Lee's passed. And so she was going through his phone, calling all the people on his speed dial. And so I said, gosh, my interactions were pretty limited, but he jumped over my hedge five times. And each time he brought a bigger ice block. And I realized when I was telling her that the ice block wasn't for me. It was for us. It was like, I didn't see what he was pointing towards. And I think that's just this reminder, like see what people are really saying by what they're doing. Maybe slowing it down a little bit, putting in the clutch once or twice to just say, if I could be a little bit less efficient with my time and maybe a couple more drawbridges and do the same thing, that kind of kindness towards yourself. You've got a job, you've got a career, you're pointing people towards unlikely careers. I went from lawyer to I started an airline. Isn't that really unlikely? Did you know that?
I did not know this. Wait, tell this story.
You know,
Bob, for every listener who's queuing in, Bob is the greatest, most fantastical anomaly because you have in your treasure chest an endless supply of gold coins and silver coins and jewels and gems. And you pull out things that I just didn't know exist, and you're a constant surprise. And I love the genuine nature that it is Bob Goff. It is Bob Goff. Of course you started an airline.
It wasn't
please
like
tell me
Jetson
the story.
747s, they were Beaver seaplanes. Have you been on a Beaver? Like they take off and land on the water?
Oh, no.
I love these planes. They're like guy planes. If they could make them out of beef jerky, they would. And so I thought they were neat, but I thought, well, I'm a lawyer. We could start an airline up in Canada because we live kind of out in the bush. And so I did. Like we got through all the paperwork. The last thing you need to start an airplane or an airline is an airplane. It's like rats. I didn't have one. So the thing about Beavers, they hit stuff. And so I got the tail section from one guy and the fuselage from somebody else, the wings from another crash plane. And we put this plane together and then we needed to paint it. And I was literally at Krispy Kreme for a friend. And I jacked all their colors. I jacked the green, the white, the font, the everything. And we called it Pacific Wings. There was an airline in Hawaii called Pacific Wings. I didn't know. I just thought if they had a problem with it, they'll change their name. And so we started this airline. And I think what my point is this. Find where things take you. Like, activating your big ambitions are going to be, that's going to be catnip for the next ambitions. We never made any money on this airline, but I co-chair, I worked in Seattle and lived in San Diego and commuted for those 25 years, you know. But because I had an airline, I co-chaired with Alaska Airlines, never paid for a ticket. And so I got to fly on their line for free, and they could fly on mine, but nobody ever did. Zero. Pick a round number. In a decade. So we made bank on like airplane tickets, but we just didn't make anything on the airline, which is fine. It was a lot of fun. Here's the point. Like if it's skateboards, find something that lights you up and to just pursue that ambition, double clutch past the emotional, like these limiting beliefs that like it won't work or I'll look so silly or what if I'm misunderstood or am I supposed to make like Jesus skateboards? No, just make really good skateboards.
Yeah.
Like just do really quality stuff and let that point to the divine. You don't need to put a return address on everything that you do. And will you be misunderstood if you don't do that? And you say, oh, heck yeah, where you sing, who you sing for, all that. Like whatever, don't worry about that. Tell them to get a puppy. Like what I want to do is I'm going to stay on track with my beautiful ambition. And I know that people listening to you will as well.
Do you know that from that Dream Big class, my dream, the one at that moment, was to open an arts community where it was a big piece of property and each art medium had its own tiny home. So if it was culinary art, there's a tiny home with any sort of culinary need that you would have. So whether it's a stove, oven, kitchen, fully stocked, everything right there. If it's art, if you're a painter, you can paint on the ceilings, you can paint on the walls, you can hang canvas. They have all the paints, all the brushes, everything you'd ever need in this tiny home. Fast forward, if you need a studio for making music, there's a tiny home studio. And it's just this art community where all of these tiny homes are available. And it's either you pay a monthly fee or you just pay a one-time pass to come and use the facilities or you can host retreats there or whatever. That was the goal. So I said, I'm going to start with one home. And I bought a house in New Orleans. And Bob, it has been an epic failure. And I say that in the best, it's been a great failure. I bought this house and I thought, okay, I can make different rooms. I can start small so that I'm not necessarily building all these homes, but I can take one home and use the rooms to build out different spaces. So I had the upstairs room was going to be a painting room, like all these canvases, and then this like reading nook. And then I had a piano room that was being built out to be a studio, and I put a pool in and all this stuff so that families who haven't had retreats in a long time could come and have a creative retreat, or couples who are newlyweds but can't afford a honeymoon could come there and retreat and all the things, right? Fail. It has taught me so much though. And this morning I woke up and I looked at I'm working with a realtor right now at buying a new piece of property because that one just totally bombed. Mold got in the house. I've spent so much money just trying to get the mold out. I mean, it's been a year and a half process of like, oh yeah, can't live in the house, but it sure is fun to look at. You know what I mean? And I know that you know. So I had a choice to make. Do I want to let this dream die and just say, well, it wasn't meant to be? Or do I want to sit outside of the dean's office and say, no, I know what is in there and I know the realm of possibility here. And so this morning I got on the email that the realtor sent and it was 32 properties. They're like, here are 32 properties that could probably harness that dream because I was very specific. And as I'm scrolling through, doubt set in of, can I really do this though? Because it failed the first time. Can I really do this? And maybe I'm misplacing the goal. Maybe I'm misplacing the ambition, or maybe I'm whatever the doubt was. And just even sitting here talking to you about the man who brought a block of ice, his persistence five times over, landed you in his speed dial list. Wow. Like what a wow. That's a wow to me. Five times of bringing an ice block, I want to say bust out the chisel and let's make a sculpture. But you clearly made a sculpture, an imprint on his heart and on who he was because he added you to speed dial. You wanted to build an airline company, total tank, But you got free airline tickets for all of those travels. Mind you, everybody listening in, Bob lived in San Diego. His law firm was in Seattle. He commuted every single day, morning and evening, by plane, and only missed 4 dinners in, what was it, 32 years or something?
That was a long time.
Of commuting back, forth, back, forth, back, forth.
I ate a lot of peanuts.
I believe it. I know. Not with peanut allergies. People are like, thanks, but no thanks. I'm over there in the corner just stuffing them down. I love peanuts. But I love that even just sitting and talking with you, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I feel invigorated again. Just to say, I'm going to get wings from this company and I'm going to get the props from this company.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the shell from this company and we're going to build a plane. And if I'm the only one that ever uses the plane, well, at least we did it. At least there was something to it. And where is success measured, you know?
And maybe moving away from deferral, like that instead of deferring your beautiful idea, just because last time it hurt, and we want to move towards pleasure and away from pain. But we have these conditioned responses. Remember back in college, you like probably took a psychology 101 class and it was about, you read about Pavlov's dog. And like when the light came on, the dog got some food. And then pretty soon they would turn on the light and the dog would start salivating because they knew something was going to happen. And those conditioned responses happen with bad stuff too. Like they're called triggers. Like I thought Trigger was the name of the Lone Ranger's horse until I had some counseling. And I'm like, that's actually a thing. So like kind of like Pavlov's dog, we like learn if this, then soon to follow is that. Mm-hmm. But I want to kind of bust through that and to say like God is just over and in and through all of this, and with some really unlikely alternate endings. And to say, I want to bust through some of that like finger memory I have that if this, then this. And I want to just say, I don't want to live by all these conditioned responses to play it safe, because I think we were born to be brave, that we were born to do just courageous, unlikely things, but do things that are courageous for you, not comparing your work to somebody else's, like tender your own fire, like keep your eyes on your own paper and say, I'm just going to tend to my fire here. And I'm just going to do one courageous thing for me. The end of the Battle of Leningrad, everybody ran out of food. They ate Pavlov's dogs. I bet they didn't see that coming. So,
but, slight turn of events.
But find like these unlikely things that you just think, well, let's say if you had a bad relationship and then you make a stupid rule that says, everybody is eventually going to leave me, so I'm not going to go deep. And then you have a bunch of shallow relationships. I'd say, could we go revisit? Like, let's go back to the scene of the crime and say, what story did you make up? What rule did you make around it? And stop letting that push you around anymore. And I think you'll unlock that new career. I think you'll make the try at the thing that the relationship that you'd say, like, I know I'm not going full Pavlov's on this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to be courageous. I'm going to be brave. I'm going to make some new rules.
You know, the beauty of that first failure, the house, is that during the glitter season, which we know what that means, I was able to work with my production manager. And so we weren't allowed to be on the road, right? But he project managed the entire house, everything that had to go on. And just day in and day out, seeing someone who was so steady and so dedicated and determined, he learned an entire new skill set. He put a teak deck. He did so many things. He said, I would have never learned all of these skill sets had I not just stepped into this house and said, okay, I'll jump in for this season. And he showed up relentlessly every single day. He is married. He just had a baby and was able to have something to do during the season and also learn and grow. Like, for me, that was the highlight. It might have failed in the sense of the dream that I saw fit, but it was actually so much better because it impacted someone. And I think the things that you just so beautifully communicate is how being with someone and caring for the other and letting their story teach you and guide you and not using cynicism and criticism to ascertain some sort of judgment of them, but instead to delight in the uniqueness of each person. There's something to be said for that I feel like it enables such incredible growth. And I feel like the world becomes a smaller place and more holistic whenever we do that. You were talking about courage. When you had to, what was the process like for you to hand over the keys of the law firm? Was it like, I've always wondered about this. So you started off, you had this amazing law firm, right? Worked there for years and years and years. And then one day you walked in, you handed over the keys and you said, okay, it's finished. But was that the launching of all of these other moments, all of these other, was it the launching of Love Does? Was it the launching of becoming an author? Was it the launching of all of that? Or did you have those things in circulation while you were a lawyer? What? How did that process work?
Yeah. So for people that are listening that have a day job, like I just thought of my being a lawyer was like fundraising. Like you can just raise a bunch of dough taking depositions. And we had some schools going here and there. And then I started spending more and more time away. And I remember taking the elevator up to these two floors on this bank building and stepping off on the 17th floor. And the receptionist said, "Hi, who are you here to see?" "Oh, actually, that's my name right behind you." Like, and I realized it'd been so long since I'd even been, I'd fly to Seattle every day. I'd go to court. I just wouldn't go to the office. And I realized I just traveled so far from where I had gone that I just had realized I'm not here anymore. And I called everybody together and I took the ring off the keychain and I just said, "I'm out." And I've never gone back. Like that was my last day at work and it was my job. It was my firm.
Wow.
But I would say this, like whether you think of it as like that famous story of Cortez burning the ships. They were deciding, shall we go back? As the last ship was burning to the waterline, we're like, nope.
So, that ship has sailed.
Yes, or sunk. Yeah. And to say, what I'm going to do is I'm going to move courageously towards the newest version of me. So my worldview, and I think you'd share this, is that we're new creations every day. New day, new Bob. And so I don't want to be playing by the rules of old Bob. And old Bob was a lawyer and was arguing with court and all that jazz. And new Bob, he's just like, he's the balloon guy. He's just like, I don't want to have these high level conversations about all this. I have such a deep conservative theology, and it's this: God loves everybody. Not everybody will accept. It's like, no, everybody and always. And so if you've got a more refined version of that, that mazel tov, that's okay. I'm not going to raise my voice only when I'm yodeling and I've never yodeled, but I'm not going to argue with people anymore. I'm not doing that. What I'm doing is I've got important work to do. I ain't coming down. And so with that kind of resolve and resilience, when the place in New Orleans crashes and burns for you, or there's a disappointment along the way for me, an unexpected outcome that I think this side of eternity, we may not be able to piece together some of the crazy stuff that's happened. But with a confidence that to say, we're just going to keep trying this because we really believe, want to keep current. Some people that are listening are afraid you're going to lose your job. And other people that are listening are afraid you're going to keep your job.
Keep it.
So just like bail out. You're two words away. I quit. Yeah. Put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, give it to somebody you love and say, mail that in. They may run to the post office or they may feel incredibly trusted by you. And so there's something beautiful about that kind of resolve. And I think it'll bring the current version out. It's like fretting the guitar. It's like saying, now we can do something with it. You were close. And that's awesome. Now let's just go do something with it.
How do you navigate disappointment when you reach that place?
Yeah, it's a gut punch in the moment. I have to resist my flaming Enneagram 7 that just wants to be yippee skippy and all that. Let's not talk about it. But to actually go there and see it, kind of like this big dream that you had and this disappointment, grieve it, and then resist the temptation to run away from it. Because I want to pretend like, let's talk about happy stuff again. And I'm not saying make a campsite out of these setbacks, but at least visit them. Like go to the scene of the crime and then just grieve it and to say, I'm not going to try to sum it up in a catchy little slogan about that, but it just said like, yeah, I really grieve that. And, but I'm not going to like let that get in the way of being the next version of me. Like, cause I think darkness doesn't want to destroy us. It wants to distract us. And I think if we get distracted by the disappointments in the past, we won't get busy building this like really beautiful future, like next courageous step. And a comparison's a punk. So don't start comparing like what you're building with what somebody else, because their rocket ship will look better.
Yeah.
But I want it to look like you. I want it to look like this beautiful emergence of your faith and your creativity and your all of that stuff. Not just one thing, but all of them. Like that's what will get you launched.
I love, well, first of all, I love this conversation so much. Me too. I feel like I'm gaining. I feel like I'm saying so much. I'm going to ask two more questions. One, can you talk about how you got involved in being working for the council in Uganda and all of the stories of the kids and Love Does, how that all intertwined? Because I feel like for listeners, you know, going from a lawyer, handing over the keys, we're building a timeline here. How did it turn into, okay, now I'm going to do some serious groundwork and I'm going to wear bulletproof vest everywhere I go.
We just started seeing if it's true that God loves the kid in Nashville equal with the kid in Ethiopia. And I believe that's true. To say, how can we do something for all of them? Love your neighbors right here across the street and maybe love a couple neighbors across an ocean. You've done that with work in Congo and work in the other things. You built a whole school there. And when a volcano took it out, you said, we didn't lament it. You just said, like, let's do it again. Which is so no, but you could see that would probably be like Lauren 2.0. Instead of falling for this myth that like, well, God, this must be a sign or whatever. He's not going to land a ladybug on your nose. What he'll say is that it was a beautiful idea the first time, and it'll be just as beautiful an idea the second time. And so sometimes when you're just open to what's going on, somebody called, it was the ambassador of Uganda, and he said, will you be the council for the Republic of Uganda? I thought he said council. He said consul. And I said, like, what's a consul? And he's like, you know, like the diplomat that's represents Uganda to the U.S. And I said, like, really? But I'm like, not a Ugandan. Can I send you a photo? Like, I'm not a Ugandan guy. And he said, no. Like, that's why we want you to be. And so I'm 15 years in for being the consul for the Republic of Uganda to the U.S. So if you come to my house and you have the flag of Uganda flies over my house, because this, it looks like every other house on the block, but it's not. I'm the diplomatic mission of a foreign government to the United States. And if something wonky comes up, I dial a number. People arrive with black Suburbans and guns. I dare you to TP my house. So, but it's just catnip for like, say yes to a couple things. Like, I didn't know the details until I got in the details. And like, oh, wow, that means that I get some awesome letterhead, by the way. It's got spears and flags. It's got all kinds of stuff on it. And then you could use that for good. Even if they fire me, I got the letterhead. I'm still using it. So what I want to do is say, look, what opportunity is already adjacent to you? Like, we bought a camp and the camp was closed because of the vid. So I looked at what's adjacent and there was a field. And so I got a bunch of horses to go in the field. There's a racetrack. I'd never been to a horse race, but I'm like, game on. So to say, what's already adjacent to you? What are the relationships that are adjacent to you? What are the opportunities? Mm-hmm. And say yes to a couple. And you might get, you know, disappointed in New Orleans, but it also might unlock something adjacent to that. And that isn't just hopeful thinking. That's an engaged way of living life. And I think that's what we're called to. We keep bringing Jesus our successes, and he keeps asking for our participation. I just want you to participate. You don't need to be, I'm already a success. He doesn't need your successes on top of his. But to say, just show up fully present, head on a swivel for the needs of the people that haven't had some successes. And to say, what if you make your success their success? And just go like, now we got a ball game.
You know, the house was a failure, but what was the furthest from a failure was the neighbors. The neighbors, bingo. My gosh. I don't want to leave. I've actually held on to the house much longer than I need. My family has been like, for the love, let us pry it out of your hands. If we've seen anything, we know you're determined, but we don't need you to be determined at this house. But the neighbor, the people, I feel so connected and just, I don't want to leave. I love it. But I think there's something to what you're saying. Just look to the right and to the left, because it might not have been the thing in front of you. It might be the things that are on the sides that are really the purpose of why you're there.
Yeah. And don't get distracted by some of the groupthink that's happening. Sometimes somebody asks me about like faith kinds of stuff. And I feel in many ways church adjacent. Like I'm like a part of it, like all, you know, go team. But I don't need to be at an address and there. I want to be adjacent to the needs of everybody, like inside, outside. Yes. So to just say, like, I just want to be adjacent to those things and then just see what's already next to me.
Yes.
And that's like, I think some of the beauty, I think that surprise. I mean, God gives us this big gift and we keep playing with a box. like the gift is what's adjacent to you, and just get the right thing. The right to say, like, what I've been gifted is some really unique relationships and some really neat opportunities. A couple of people love well, whether you made them or you like created that family from several pieces of others or whatever. And to just say, could I just say, we tease around here, we call ourselves like not a church. And what a not a church does is we act like just care for each other, but there's like no offering plate. There's no big sermon at the end. We're just like, let's just have a creating, caring community. That doesn't mean don't be part of the other one. Be adjacent to all of the different ones. Like as people are gathering to just say like, man, is there anything I can do to be helpful? Let me join in your celebration or point towards some additional celebrations that might be worth going to. But you don't have to be angsty to do that. Be Switzerland. Give me a bobsled and a bar of chocolate. Nobody's mad at them and they're not mad at anybody else. And I'm not either.
Oh, I find some beautiful commonality with you in that, Bob. I'm so grateful for your time. This is so beautiful. Hey, do you want to tell me one fun story about Sweet Maria?
Oh,
you want to let our listeners know?
Sweet Maria.
Let's talk about one of the best things in your life.
Oh, yes. Well,
she is the gem.
I think you know about this one. I was like running around all over the place, trying to make a difference in a couple places. And Maria put in the front window of the house a help wanted sign. And she wasn't saying she needed help. She's like, pal, you need help. Like, you are missing it. And so she's kept all these years, she's kept that sign, but she doesn't hang it like the sword of Damocles over my head. Instead, it's just this reminder that we need to make it happen where we are. Kind of that, again, this be where your feet are. Find what God's already done in your life, the people he's dropped into your life, and you've got some really special ones. And just make sure you're doing a good job with that. Think of these as concentric circles. And then the next, say, like a group of friends, and then maybe the next group out might be the people that really enjoy your music or identify with what you're doing. But make sure you get the middle part right first before you get out on ring number 50. And certainly don't get distracted because somebody's biggest thing is ring number 100 to you. Mm-hmm. To just say, it isn't better, it's just different. And so I just don't want us to get distracted. We're doing important work. We can't come down. And Sweet Maria Goff reminds me of that every single day.
Oh, I love her. Just being able to see her face, but just a glimpse, my heart just swole up. I felt like, oh, this is going to be such sweet time. Just getting to see her face was such a delight.
Oh, well, she loves you.
I love you, my friend.
I love you too.
I love her. I'm so grateful for this time. Hey, Bob, where can people find you?
Awesome.
So you don't have to give your address. You can give like all the...
I know that's
I mean, you can do whatever, but...
Yeah, if you just Google Bob, you'll find me.
Perfect. Bob.com. Amen.
Yeah.
Oh, I love you, friend.
Thanks
Thank
a
you
million.
So much.
Great being with you. I love you.
All right. Daigle Bites is an Amazon Music podcast hosted by me, Lauren Daigle, and produced by Elizabeth Evans Media Productions. Hey, Hey, I'm Lauren Daigle. For more interviews and thought-provoking conversations, and to listen to every episode, follow us here exclusively on Amazon Music.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Daigle Bites ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Rhea Seehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.